Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome back. This is Jay Richards, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute, and I am joined again by Senior Fellow Mike Keyes, a science historian and author of the book Unbelievable. And we're coming together again for our last episode in our series at ID the Future, talking about the 2020 Cosmos series. For those of you that are joining late, this is a series on National Geographic Television, and it's actually the 3.0 for the Cosmos series. So there was a famous Cosmos series on PBS in 1980 with astronomer Carl Sagan that we talk about a lot. Then in 2014, there was a reboot of Cosmos with astronomer Neil deGrasse Tyson. And this is now the third version of the Cosmos series, Cosmos Possible Worlds, on the National Geographic Channel. And Mike and I have been sort of doing a running commentary on various of the episodes, talking about the science and the religion that works its way into these episodes, and also talking about many of the science myths on which Mike is an expert. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Great to be with you, Jay.
So let's, you know, it's funny because everything kind of comes together in this final episode of Cosmos, but I want to read from this final narration, actually in the closing scene. It goes like this. Stars make worlds and a world made life. And there came a time when heat shot out from the molten heart of this world and it warmed the waters. And the matter that had rained down from the stars came alive, and that star stuff became aware. And that life was sculpted by the earth and its struggles with the other living things. And a great tree grew up, one with many branches. And six times it was almost felled, but still it grows. And we are but one small branch, one that cannot live without its tree. And slowly we learn to read the book of nature, to learn her laws, to nurture the tree, to become a way for the cosmos to know itself and to return to the stars. Wow, that's heavy stuff. And of course, it's not at all a coincidence that this sounds very much like a kind of revision of the opening chapters of Genesis in the Bible. And it's amazing, this kind of soaring mythic language that shapes what is otherwise supposed to be a scientific documentary. I mean, what fundamental questions does this, not just the series, but does this episode address, Mike?
Yeah, Jay, it's a classic worldview statement. You know, where did we come from? What is our purpose? So, for example, in this narration, so we're star stuff, but of course, we're star stuff that became aware. So the narrative goes, of course, without anywhere in the episodes telling us a plausible scientific account of how unconscious, purposeless material stuff could somehow organize itself and, you know, consciousness pops out of that. But that's part of the story, that life is really the hero of the story, Jay, and we're part of that heroic struggle to become aware and to know the world and to shape it and to nurture. And our purpose is to nurture this life that we've been, this gift we've been given by the cosmos, if you will.
I mean, it's a remarkable sort of turn, right? Is that the star stuff becomes aware, and that we've not only learned to discover it, but learned to nurture it, so that you get this. It's a kind of an interesting, I don't know if, you know, in philosophical terms, you'd call this panpsychism, or really kind of a pantheism, where an impersonal material universe then somehow becomes aware and comes to know itself. But there's no doubt that this is not your grandfather's reductive materialism. This is some kind of weird hybrid of materialism and pantheism. As such, you know, you get a kind of a religious mythology. I mean, how does the final episode, by the way, it's called Seven Wonders of the New World, but how does it offer hope for the future for viewers?
Well, the use of numbers and the symbology traditionally associated with those is definitely at work here, Jay. So you have, of course, five widely recognized mass extinction events on Earth. And the sixth putative event in the making is supposedly human-caused catastrophic global warming. And of course, mm-hmm. that episode was very short on really making that case strong. But yeah, and then this, so the idea is that there's these six acts to this play that we're in, and Earth is in the center of attention here. And that on the one hand, they're wanting to to say that we're just an accident. On the other hand, they're wanting to say that our future is to learn how to take control of our own evolution and to nurture the future of life and to, as it says here, to return to the stars. And that's, of course, returning to finding other ways that the universe has come to know itself, other life forms that are presumed to exist in huge quantities out there, and to join this cosmic consciousness. But yeah, and I think it's kind of bipolar, really, in an intellectual sense. On the one hand, you have standard materialism, but in this, as they get caught up in the storytelling, there's all kinds of purpose that is imputed to nature, and it makes it sound like we're a part of something grand, that some greater purpose that's not just material stuff. And the authors, when you look at the authors of the script, they do come from a variety of perspectives of just plain old atheism to more of a pantheistic viewpoint. And at least based on the interviews I've heard of Andrian, who was married to Carl Sagan, and others involved, you know, they want to, in various interviews, they want to say that science can have great stories just like religion, but our science-based stories are believable because they're based in science. But of course, look at Evolution News and today, you know, Discovery Institute's news outlet, and you'll find that the evidence is really lacking, and it really is imaginative storytelling with very little substance.
I mean, do you think that this represents, so it's really a kind of, you know, the kind of double barrel pantheism on the one side and atheism and materialism on the other, is this does this represent different individuals that were involved in the production? Or do you think that this is this kind of metaphysical schizophrenia? Is this common? I know it's probably somewhere in Drayan's thinking, but also in Neil deGrasse Tyson's thinking. Or is this they're trying to appeal to the audience? I mean, what do you think is going on?
Well, you know, there are a couple of sociologists of science who have done surveys of scientists and categorized them into various categories of atheists, agnostics, and believers in God. And one of the things that surfaces from this, and I mentioned this in my book and give the footnotes, is that many atheists report having an experience of awe and wonder and a kind of religious experience in the face of nature. So it is getting harder and harder to distinguish atheism from pantheism, that is, no God to all God.
Right.
So I think that this does speak to, you know, some fundamental things about it, what it means to be human, that we find it unbearable to really consistently follow through, that there is just blind, pitiless, you know, purposeless material processes with no meaning or larger purpose, that it's difficult for human beings to live with that. And so we're constantly making up stories to give ourselves a sense of meaning. And of course, those stories can be either rooted in evidence or not. And unfortunately, the Cosmos series has repeatedly spun out these stories that are not well rooted in evidence in terms of, you know, what they're really saying about the human condition.
Yes.
There's bits and pieces of science, of course, and well explained, but they keep going way beyond what the evidence supports to give a narrative that it gives people a sense of hope for their lives.
Well, you know, I'm reminded of what C.S. Lewis said. I forget if it's in his book Miracles or it's in Mere Christianity, but he talks about pantheism really being the most natural form of religion. So in other words, kind of untutored intuitions, people, cultures left on their own. It's actually easy to get to pantheism because, you know, you look around and nature is awe-inspiring. It's sometimes beautiful, sometimes terrifying. But it's definitely bigger than any one of us. And so it's the sort of, you know, kind of natural instinct is to be pantheist, whereas a kind of hardcore atheism, as you said, just this pitiless, blind indifference of just matter in motion, it really just is not satisfying to the human soul. I don't know how to really describe it. So it's always kind of thought that kind of hardcore materialism, rock rib materialism, is very much a minority taste that only a small percentage of people can stomach. And what's funny is that even in these science documentaries by the official spokespersons for science, they themselves can't manage to do it and immediately move into this kind of pantheism. And I know in the in this episode, I think, right? Tyson himself talks about a near future in which he talks about a person's neural network. So your connectome, which is basically all the connections and the neurons and the synapses in your brain, is referred to as a connectome. And he talks about how maybe in the future that might actually be resurrected. I mean, isn't this kind of just a secular Easter story?
It is. And, you know, it's funny that this final episode of Cosmos 3.0 aired just 2 days prior to the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, which is celebrated around the same time as Easter. And so this kind of tension between traditional religion and the resurrection of Jesus celebrated around that time, and science, scientific analysis of the Earth as our savior, and that maybe we can have a materialistic sort of resurrection that, you know, provided, of course, people in the future would approve of people like Jay Richards reappearing, yes. You know.
I'm assuming we probably won't make the cut, you know. But I mean, yeah, so you've got a kind of an ascension into heaven with us reaching for the stars and connecting with these higher intelligences up in the heavens. You've got a resurrection of the body, not exactly, but I guess it's supposed to be a resurrection of your consciousness. With maybe a 3D scan of our connectome, and then you've got a god in the form of nature or Mother Earth. And so you really do. I mean, this is like Marxism in some ways. It's a kind of secular substitute, not just for religion generically, but honestly, it sounds a lot like Christianity.
You know, it's been said that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I'm sure they don't want to go that way, but they do often, you know, they say explicitly that religion doesn't have all the good stories, that we tell stories as materialists, but also show that there is meaning and purpose. But to do so, they really do drift into pantheism, as we've been discussing.
Yeah, and I know there's Andrea herself talking about the storytelling in Cosmos. And of course, remember, just to remind listeners, you mentioned this a minute ago, but this is Sagan's widow who's involved in the production. And she has, every story that we tell has to satisfy different criteria. It has to be a way into a complex scientific idea or an important scientific idea. We're aiming for your brain, your eye, your heart, your senses, your ear. Via effects. Everything has to be working together in concert to give you a consummate experience and to attract you to want to know more. I mean, that's perfect. I mean, and she's right. Of course, you want it to be visually compelling and interesting, but of course, there's more than that going on here. And I'm reminded, Mike, and I'd love to have you sort of comment here at the end on this memorable mantra from the original Cosmos series, the first of the franchise, in which Carl Sagan himself says, "The cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be." I mean, is this third version, is this fulfilling that promise from way back in 1980?
That's the idea, Jay. And, you know, that mantra that was issued by Sagan and then the recording of it was how the 2014 Cosmos series began, with this haunting sort of Carl Sagan back alive, you know, speaking this kind of secular liturgy, really, because it sounds liturgical, right? Because it's imagery, yes. The biblical description of God, and saying that the cosmos is substituting for that role as the source of all things, and that there's nothing beyond that. So I think that what they're doing here is they're trying to usurp the rightful authority of science at answering interesting questions about the way the universe works and trying to piece together different origin events, but in the lack of evidence that it really could happen without guidance, they're infusing into it that nature just somehow magically pops out consciousness, and that we become a way for the universe to know itself. That's a phrase used several times in the Cosmos series. So life, again, becomes the hero of the story. The cosmos gives birth to life, and then life knows in turn the cosmos and is able to say things like Carl Sagan's phrase about the cosmos being all it is, was, or ever will be. So it's this story that we came from the stars and then we returned to the stars, and we pay homage to where we came from, and that this is our destiny, you know? The force has awakened.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, essentially, in sort of following the trajectory first of the Cosmos series through these three versions, you know, these three incarnations. I mean, you get the sense that the kind of drift of scientific materialism, it's ultimately arid by itself, and it drifts into a type of nature spirituality and pantheism. And I think, you know, if the most redeeming feature of this third rendition of the Cosmos series is to kind of make that point quite explicit. At this point, not only is it obvious, but the producers themselves concede it. And so I think, if nothing else, that's beneficial for us to remember that scientific materialism might seem like the opposite of a spirituality, and yet it transitions into a type of spirituality, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, Seth MacFarlane, the Hollywood atheist who introduced Andrian to Brannon Braga, also an atheist. Mm-hmm. Braga was the creator of like 150 episodes of Star Trek: The Next Generation. And he summed up his purpose in showing that this kind of science-y, you know, astronomy-themed, Star Trek, the purpose that he had in mind in writing the scripts was to show that, and I quote him, "Religion sucks, mm-hmm. isn't science great, and finally, how the hell do we get the other 95% of the population to come to their senses?" So, I mean, he calls it atheistic mythology. This was in a 2006 wow. International Atheist Conference where he was bragging about his creation of atheist mythology. But he still thinks it's better than traditional mythology, but he's at least labeling it as mythology.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. And that's a quite explicit admission. I mean, those of us as kind of ID proponents and critics of materialism have been saying that this stuff is happening implicitly. It's nice to have it, you know, right from the horse's mouth with Seth MacFarlane. I didn't know that quote. That's terrific.
Yeah, I was quoting a chapter in my book on the Cosmos series. So.
Oh, that's great. Because I know you have a chapter on it. It's called Preaching Anti-Theism on TV, Cosmos, right, from your book Unbelievable.
Yeah, and the common denominator is what they're against. They're against theism, and they can do it either in an atheistic or a pantheistic way, and they kind of bounce back and forth between the two.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the enemy's always the same, even if the strategy differs. So, yeah. Well, that's a perfect way to end this series. This has been fun, Mike, going through this with you. Mike Keyes, senior fellow of Discovery Institute, author of Unbelievable. And a historian of science. Mike, it's great to be with you.
Fun conversation, Jay. Take care.
This again has been Jay Richards. Thanks for joining us for this episode and for this series of ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.